Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Until a few months ago, I was sure that I, as a psychic, I was a complete dud. I was as psychic as a post. But my experience of channeling, liberating Jesus, and then beginning to know my primary spirit guide has convinced me that what people have been telling me all along really is true. All of us have psychic powers. Like most other things, these powers just develop differently in each of us. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is a lovely and very gifted psychic named Laura Lynn Jackson. Her book is The Light Between Us. It's a beautiful book. Her life story is a great example of the psychic gift when it is shining brightest. And it makes for fascinating reading, and I think it's going to make for fascinating listening. Welcome, Laura. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to be connecting with you and all the listeners.
Well, what I'd like to do is start by asking you about a little bit about your childhood. People who are naturally psychic basically have an extra sense that most of us just aren't aware of. We perhaps shut it off. I now understand it's there in everybody, but we are learning, I think, when we're very young to discount it. Children no longer see their imaginary friends. People no longer feel intuitive in the same way. And this happens for most of us when we're very young. And maybe we didn't have a deep gift anyway. But you come from a family of psychics, right? You have other psychics in your family, Laura?
Yes. You know, it's run on my mother's side of the family for generations and generations. So I think there is some sort of physiological component to it. But I'm in absolute agreement with you. I think that we all come into this world psychically connected to one another and to the other side. You know, I see it as cords of light that go between us here and between us and our loved ones, yeah, on the other side. It's just tapping back into it.
Yeah, but this is interesting, and everyone should note this, please. If you have other people in your family with psychic abilities, it's very likely that it just runs in your family. Most of the people I have met who really are gifted psychically, goes back a long way. They tell me, and sometimes it's on both sides of their family. So they come by it just as you might come by red hair. It's a natural thing for them. So
absolutely.
What I'd like to do is then say, how did you first, you didn't even realize what you were experiencing was different initially, right, Laura?
That's correct. You know, I think as a child, we're so new to the world, we don't understand that everybody doesn't perceive things in the same way that we are. And it was, you know, it started at a very young age for me. I would meet people and I would start experiencing whatever emotions they were experiencing. And it took me a while to understand that those feelings that would come and go were not coming from me, but being brought to me by their energy field. But at the time, I thought, well, this must be how everybody functions. You know, it didn't occur to me that I was unique in that way, or that I was more open than others.
So, but then one day you sort of dared to talk to your mother about it.
Yes. Well, there was something that happened when I was 11 years old that really brought this into acute focus for me and made me, you know, suddenly realize that something was very, very different about me. And at the time, I thought something was very wrong with me. You know, I was 11 years old and I was swimming in my above-ground swimming pool. It was a hot August day. And my mother called out to say, you know, she was going to visit my grandparents who lived about an hour away. And I was seized by this absolute moment of panic, with this sheer absolute knowing that I had to go there that day and I had to spend time with him, my grandfather. So I called out to her. I said, please, Mom, wait, I have to come with you. You know, and she looked at me like I was a little bit off that day because it was a beautiful summer day. And she said, but stay, enjoy the day. Don't be silly. And I said, no, you have to wait for me. I have to come with you. So my loving, wonderful mother, of course, did wait for me. I ran into the house, changed, you know, jumped in the car dripping wet. And that sense of panic didn't subside till I got to my grandfather's and I saw him. And we spent the most wonderful day together, just the two of us, you know, laughing, singing, talking on the porch. And when it was time to leave, I turned to him and I said, you know, I love you so much, Pop-Pop. And I hugged him. And that was the last time I ever saw him alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was diagnosed with leukemia 3 days later, and within 3 weeks he was crossed. And in those days, kids weren't allowed to go to the hospital and see them. And so I was, really racked by guilt and confusion, because I knew that I had known that he was going to die, and that's why I knew I had to go see him. And I felt almost complicit in, with the forces that took him, or cursed. So that is why I ended up confessing to my mother, and telling her, I have to tell you, I knew this, and I what's wrong with me? I said to her, what is wrong with me that I would know this? What, am I dark? Am I cursed? And she looked at me and she said, no part of you is dark or cursed, Laura. You just have an extra ability is all. And it's something that deserves to be explored. And then she confessed to me that it had run in, her family for generations, and that she had it, and that my grandmother had it. And then I felt part of, this kind of club. I didn't feel as alone, but I just wasn't sure I wanted to be in that club. But in time I've realized that even that knowing that he was going to cross was a gift. It was really because my soul was so tied to his. Yeah, my soul was tied to his soul, and I sensed he was going to go on a journey. And because of that knowing, I got one more day in the physical way to spend with him. And that's a beautiful thing.
I've heard of occasions where people who are not psychic at all have had a similar experience. They had a sense they had to see someone or call someone or be there or something, and that turned out to be their last opportunity with a loved one. I think that even not supposedly non-psychic people will have that kind of experience, but it's something to pay attention to. If you have a sense you ought to see someone, don't put it off. Let's make sure that we give ourselves the gift of closure, if closure is what it's going to be, and not leave that dangling and then feeling bad about it. Let's fast forward to when you were in college. You went through, one of the things I like about your book is that it made me understand from your perspective how it feels to have these gifts, because I think many of us, when we look at the notion of being able to predict things, being able to know things that nobody else knows, and having this sort of depth, internal depth, which you describe so well, that sounds like a good thing. Wouldn't that be fun? But you make it feel a lot harder to cope with. What were some of the things that stressed you about it?
I think for me, it took me decades, honestly, probably about two decades to understand how to open and close my abilities, because I truly believe we really are all psychic. It's just that many of us have tuned out and shut off and shut down. I think we all have these abilities. For me, they were so pronounced that I never could seem to turn them off, and so they became really quite a distraction at times. Every person I would pass, I would get a blast of energy, either positive or negative, or understand things about the person. And because I wasn't using it in a productive way in my waking hours, I would get so much in my dreams. And sometimes very frightening things. I had a dream when I was in college, my freshman year, that one of my good friends was dying as he was dying. And that really, that shook me to my core. It made me reexamine again, why do I have this ability? It was confusing to me because I would know things, but I wouldn't be able to prevent things, or I would know things as they were happening that I couldn't stop it. I didn't understand what role it was supposed to play in my life. And it wasn't until I understood that this could be used as a force of goodness in the world to help people on their path and help us all to know that we're all connected to one another here and as well as our loved ones on the other side, that it really all began to make sense for me.
Yeah, no, that was a very sort of shocking story. A friend, a college friend, was dying, and so you dreamed that you were sort of in his position, but you didn't even know why you dreamed that you were dying. No, I think that, and, all right, that gives me some perspective on it. If you aren't in control of the powers, and if you aren't even sure what they mean all the time, I can see that would be difficult. How did you manage to get control of these powers so that you could use them in a more disciplined way?
You know, I think it's kind of like riding a bike. When you first get on, it's wobbly. You fall, you're wobbly, and you're like, how am I ever going to ride smoothly? And you practice, and you get more in tune and mindful of your connections. You know, in that respect, your physical connections with the bike and balance. But in my way, I think I had to really work very hard with my spirit guides on the other side, because we all have spirit guides. They're really our mentors and our you know, teachers on the other side, and they'll help us. You know, you just have to open to them, and you have to open to the pulls you get. So I worked really hard at that, and I worked very hard at understanding how things felt for me. When I read, it is such a multisensory experience, and I will feel things, hear things, you know, and I think it took me a while to organize that, but I think we have the ability to set parameters with the other side, and we have the ability to organize how we want to get our information. And so for me, you know, one thing that I did that was the most important thing I ever did with my abilities is I organized them into my screen, I call it. So when I read, I am watching this kind of, it looks like a widescreen TV, and it's divided into the left-hand side and the right-hand side, and on the left-hand side is where I get all my psychic information, and on my right-hand side is where my mediumship comes in. So I'll see points of light enter on the right-hand side of my screen and give me information, and those are, you know, people's loved ones who have crossed. And so for me, it's very clear and organized. And I also keep that screen, I keep it shut all of the time unless I'm doing a reading. Because readings are also, when you do mediumship work and when you do psychic work, it's draining. You know, the psychic work the psychic door I can never fully close. So when I meet people, I will see them in colors or I'll understand things about them. But it's not really a distraction, you know. I've closed it most of the way. The mediumship door I keep completely closed unless I'm doing a reading because mediumship is really exhausting. You know, I say if I were a cell phone on 100%, if I do a psychic reading, I'll go from 100 to 85% and I'll be okay after an hour. If I do a mediumship reading for an hour, I'll go from 100 to, you know, like 2%. I really have to, you know, shut down and recharge. So for me, it was really understanding my abilities, understanding how it felt, organizing it into this way of perceiving it, and understanding how to open and shut to it.
What's interesting to me is I have a very good friend who's a psychic medium, and she tells me many of the same things you do. I think this is just part of how this force works. There's a limited number of readings you can do in a day, and it drains you considerably. You went through a period of time, though, where you were just a psychic. You had this sort of natural ability that you were able to even put in the petty saver, and people would call you or come by, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, a dead person showed up, and that was not something you expected. Tell us the story.
So, you know, we have this saying in you know, the psychic medium community that all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are medium. And I really think it's kind of like an energy thing. The more you open up psychically, kind of when you reach that highest level, then you can kind of perceive and hear the other side. Honestly, I think in many ways I was a medium my whole life. I just didn't understand it, you know, because I would get messages from my grandfather and I would dream of him and I would see him around. And even when my friend in college died, I remember I was driving one day and he popped through to me and he told me to slow down because there was a cop around the turn. So I did. But I never, you know, and there was a cop and it was great. He saved me from the ticket. So I think, I was doing it already, but I just didn't understand it. And to me, that was comfortable and natural because it was people on the other side who I loved and connected with.
Right.
But when I was, you know, when I placed an ad in the local Penny Saver and I was just, you know, presenting myself as a psychic, I had a young man come for a reading, and during his reading I started getting all this information about his girlfriend, like very specific things, like her name, her shoe size, the pocketbook she just got, and all these details.
Oh.
And then I, you know, this energy pushed in on the right-hand part of my screen and I realized I was getting this from this, and I was hearing this name, his name, and I was so confused. And then the person I was reading for said, well, that makes sense to me. You're talking to my girlfriend's ex-boyfriend who died in a car accident, you know, and so that really shocked me in a way, because at that moment, I realized what a great responsibility this was. And,
yes, it
you
is.
Know, and I paused for a while. You know, it took me a while to come to terms with that and honor that, you know, and really be comfortable with that in the world. You know, I was raised by two teachers who, you know, they raised me to be a critical thinker, and a critical thinker doesn't ever accept things at face value. You always explore it, and you test it, and you challenge it, and that sort of thing. And so even with my own abilities and gifts, I've really, it took me a while. I had to take a step back and really examine it and figure it out and make sure, you know, okay, this is what I'm doing, you know. And that's ultimately led me on a path, too. I work with scientists. I'm a research medium, and that's been a fascinating experience for me, too. It definitely took me a while to understand it and come to terms with it and use it for good.
Well, and it seems that a critical part of that was learning how to master this energy that you were using, because when it was out of control, your life was not your own. And so how did you learn to get control of it? I mean, what did you just think, I will be in control, or did you tell your guides, I'm going to opt out and let you guys figure out how to make this livable? What did you do?
You know, there was a time in my early 20s where I was just overwhelmed by it, and I would start to perceive things in the world, like negative things, like there was a plane crash that, you know, happened off the coast of Long Island, Flight 800, and I felt it as it was happening, and I had such a reaction, and then I turned on the news, and there it was, and I really said to my guides on the other side, I'm done. I don't want this anymore. This is too painful and confusing, and it was about 3 years later, I got married, I had my first daughter, and something happened to me when I had her. It was as if this great light had come through me into the world, and that cord from where she came from was so beautiful and so strong that I just started getting so much information for people, and I just understood fundamentally that it was now time for me to do this in the world.
Yeah.
You know, but I was working full-time as a teacher. My husband was working full-time and putting himself through law school, and we had a newborn, and so I said to my guides on the other side, I will do this, I will honor it, but we have to come up with a system. And that's really when I organized everything into my screen, and I said, I need to work at this. You need to show me. We need to work together. And it took a lot of practice to understand and feel, you know, just like practicing an instrument. It gets more fluid as you go along. And so I've been doing this for decades, you know, and I've practiced every single week of my life, because I can never not read, because then my energy gets really kind of spinny and wacky and out of control. So I almost, I feel like I'm a teapot, you know, that's about to whistle if I don't read. And so reading kind of brings my energy back down. So there's this very interesting balance that goes on energetically with me. You know, and I think one of the interesting things I found out from being a Winbridge research medium is there's 19 of us certified in the U.S. as research mediums. And the scientists who run the organization kind of can do really interesting surveys of all of us. And one thing that they found is that out of the 19 of us, 68% of the Winbridge mediums have two or more autoimmune diseases, such as lupus or so forth. And I'm not one of them, but I think what that, you know, shows me too is that we have to all be very careful with our energy. Energy is a very real thing, and psychic and mediumistic abilities are there. We just have to know that you can't do that all the time. It's like running a 5K. You couldn't do that nonstop, you know, every day of the week.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I've learned to honor that.
There are very few physical mediums in the world, but one of the things that physical mediums have is issues, because the ectoplasm is created by the pancreas. A lot of them develop diabetes. And, and their lives are shortened, usually by 10 years or more from what you would have thought they would have lived. And that kind of, so, again, these energies are very hard on our bodies unless they're carefully managed. I think that's a wonderful point that you make. How is this in your regular life? Do your friends all say, well, I can't keep a secret from you, so I might as well tell you, we're talking about a divorce.
I mean, that's so funny. I try to be very, very respectful of my abilities, and that took me a while, too, to honor and respect them. You know, when I was in college, I used to not, you know, be exactly honorable. I would see a cute boy, and I'd tune into his energy, and I'd go up to him, and I'd say, like, oh, you know, your name is so-and-so, and you have a brother who's this age, and that, you know, and it was almost like a little bit of a game for me. But I've learned that that is not what I'm meant to do with it. I'm so, you know, respectful of this, that I would never purposely read someone without his or her permission. To me, it's the equivalent of like peeking at their underwear. So when I'm in normal mode, I try really hard, you know, not to. You know, and there is a very profound difference between me being in normal mode and me being in psychic mediumship mode. You know, one of the things that scientists have done is an EEG of my brain, and they've found that when I go into reading mode, my brainwave activity changes dramatically. The entire frontal portion of my brain, the frontal lobe, the brainwave activity almost completely silences there. And different parts light up. Yeah, in the middle and the back. And you know what I find interesting too? You were talking about how we're all born psychic, and oftentimes children talk about these great experiences, but I've noticed right around age 5 through 7, they all seem to shut down, or the majority of them.
Right.
And the interesting thing that I made a connection with is the frontal part of your brain is the part of your brain where your analytical thinking, your critical thinking, your language skills, your math, your communication, all of that takes place. And I really feel like when kids start formal schooling at age 5, they switch from using all these beautiful parts of their brain to really going into focus in that frontal part. And I think we get stuck there. You know, that's why I think meditation, yoga, these things can help us get out of that frontal lobe and back into the other parts. You know, the scientists told me there seems to be some sort of switch that I'm able to flick to just shut that off and go into the other part. Because when I'm reading, my brain looks like someone who's in a deeply meditative state or even like unconscious, but I'm fully awake and aware. So I really think we all have that ability. We've just been trained to stay in that front part of our brain. And I think we need to unplug from that.
It also seems to be something that happens anyway, from a little study I've done. During the first approximately 5 years of life, everybody in every culture is in what they call download mode. They're able to take in much more information than they're able to process, and they're kind of gathering what they're going to, if they're a hunter-gatherer kid, they're learning how to hunter-gather or whatever, but then that changes, so even if we didn't, just to make you feel better, even if we didn't inflict kindergarten on children, apparently this happens with most people anyway, that the frontal lobe sort of takes over, and when it does, it shuts down a lot of these abilities. I just want to pause briefly here and say, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and Flying High in Spirit. You can learn all about my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest today is Laura Lynn Jackson. She's a beautiful and gifted natural psychic, and she's a tested and certified medium. Both Forever Family Foundation and the Winbridge Institute have certified her abilities, which is the same as saying that my dear friend Gary Schwartz, who wrote the Afterlife Experiments, where he tested psychics, it's like being certified by him. This is the Good Housekeeping seal on mediums. So I congratulate you for that. That's not an easy thing to do, to be able to read under sufficiently restrictive conditions that these very, very carefully regulated institutions would nonetheless certify you. How did that come about? Where did you start with being certified?
I think for me, as I was saying before, I'm a critical thinker, and so when I realized I had these abilities, I wanted to make sure and have them tested, you know, and that led me on quite a journey. I even went to a psychiatrist at one point and confessed, you know, I'm hearing voices, I know things. Am I crazy? Is there something wrong with me? Am I delusional? You know, and he said to me, well, is the information you're getting accurate? I said, yes, I'll get names, I'll get dates, I'll get information about, you know, specific things in the family or upcoming events and all these things that are accurate and true. And he said, well, you know what? The universe is much bigger than we know. And what you're doing, it seems like a beautiful thing, so continue. So, you know, then I was like, okay, good, I'm not crazy, check. Then I decided, you know, I wanted to get tested in any way I could to validate, you know, not only these abilities, but also to be able to go help people in the world. So Forever Family Foundation... So Forever Family Foundation, I tested for in 2005, and the reason I really wanted to test for them is they're a not-for-profit organization that was founded by Fran and Bob Ginsberg when they lost their daughter Bailey in a car accident, and right away they started getting, you know, information and communication that they knew was very real. So one of the things they wanted to do was be able to give people who were in grief resources of mediums who were absolutely, you know, 100% legitimate. So when we're tested for a Forever Family Foundation, any work we do through the foundation is completely volunteer, which I love because I love giving back to people. And that's been one of my greatest, you know, blessings and gifts here is working with the Forever Family Foundation and doing grief retreats with bereaved parents and doing events where, you know, connecting people here with their loved ones on the other side. So that was a beautiful moment for me to become part of that. And then WinBridge is, it's a little bit different because it's completely scientists, and the goal there is for mediums to get tested, and if we pass, we can then, you know, honor our connection with science and have scientists explore how these abilities work for us. Because I think that there is a profound message in this for all of humanity. You know, for me on my journey, it was really important for me to understand that, wow, this is true. What does this mean for my life? But it also follows, what does this mean for all of our lives? Because there is no death. Our consciousness exists when our bodies end.
And it's eternal, you know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's very important that I think we give validity to this field of research through science as well.
People are wondering how you were tested. Did both institutions test you the same way, and what did they do?
No, it's a little different. Forever Family Foundation, I went to it was hosted at an event space, and there were like five stations of what's called sitters, so people who were going to be read. And they had set up video cameras at every single section, and then the sitter just had a clipboard where they were scoring every single statement I would make. And they weren't allowed to respond other than to say yes or no. And so I would get 15 minutes at each station, and I would sit down, and then I would just read the sitter and tell them everything I was getting, you know, mediumistically, and who was coming through, and names and dates, and all these things, you know. And so we went through that. You know, it took about, you know, an hour and 20 minutes or so to complete it. And then, you know, Fran and Bob said, okay, thank you. You know, we're going to be reviewing the tape and scoring you, and if you pass, we'll let you know. So that was that test, and I was so thrilled, you know, when I got the call that I had passed, and I was then part of this foundation and could volunteer. WinBridge
was
very.
Did you say they've certified only 19 people? Is that what you
said?
Well,
that's WinBridge. Forever Family, you know, they've been around since 2005. So over time, they've certified more than, you know, I would say it's probably a little over 20. But you know, the certification process is it's not easy. A lot of people want to become certified but don't pass it. You know, they've got a very small percentage of passing rate. WinBridge was a little different. WinBridge I tested for and passed in 2011, and that was an 8-step quintuple blinded test. So, you know, the researchers they were super careful with their protocol. You know, they made sure that, you know, the person who was calling me and asking me to give the information about the deceased I was connecting with had no idea who the deceased was. You know, and so that was helpful because that eliminates me being able to, you know, do telepathy with the person. Or, you know, there's something called cold readings that skeptics talk about, and they say, you're just getting the information because you're listening to the intonation of the voice or the body language. So that eliminated any possibility of cold reading because the person I was giving the information had no idea. And then it was blinded so that I would do two readings, and both readings would be sent to each of the sitters, and they had to score each reading, pass one, fail the other with a big margin of difference, and pick which reading was for them. So there was really no way it could work unless it was really happening.
Yeah.
And I remember when I learned about it and I learned about the 8 steps and how rigorous it was, I said to myself, okay, this is it. If I pass this, I can never question my abilities again because there's absolutely no way that anybody could cheat and pass it.
That's right. Yeah. But WinBridge is in Tucson, Arizona, which is, of course, where Gary Schwartz also is at the University of Tucson. And Gary was a skeptic and tested. He sort of developed a protocol of testing triple and quadruple blind testing of mediums. And his book, The Afterlife Experiment, I recommend to everyone. I think it came out in 2003. But the reason I recommend it is that I had a terrible time with when I was trying to understand mediums in the very sort of latter part of the 90s, in the very first part of this century, the first year or two. I had probably 24 readings. with all kinds, some very expensive mediums. And I didn't find a one, except actually I did find one, the first one, who was not famous and was very inexpensive, and she did a pretty good job. She brought through a number of people. But then I had so many other appointments, and it was almost embarrassing. They could get nothing. It was all, and so I didn't believe in what you do. I'm sorry, for years I'm an afterlife researcher who thought most psychic mediums are charlatans. But then I read that book, and only when I read Gary Schwartz's book did I understand what I had done wrong. I had nobody recent that I was grieving. I had I was skeptical by nature, and more so as the readings went on. And frankly, your loved ones get bored. I mean, they'd proven to me that they were there. I had a lot the first few times that came through. After that, I was like, later for you, lady. We're going to go play and do other things. So nobody, only my brother-in-law would always show up. So,
oh, that's funny.
Which is my way of showing this is a real science. And the dead are real people, and they have feelings and preferences, too. Now that I understand what I did wrong, I have no trouble working with real mediums, and it's worked extremely well in my life this year, which has been revolutionary for me because I've begun to channel books and understand, in fact, that I've been doing it all my life without knowing it. But this is a real science. This is a real field of knowledge, and it's a field of information, which you beautifully point out, Laura, is for the world. It isn't only the people who sit with mediums and actually often have their lives transformed, but all of us can look at this amazing field and understand that there are people who are doing God's work in helping all of us understand how very easy it is to communicate with the dead, that they're right here with us, and that our own lives, by definition, are eternal. So I really salute what you do. I think it's wonderful. I love meeting someone who's been double certified, because both Forever Family and Winbridge, you don't fool at all.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, too? You bring up Gary Schwartz. I know him very well, and he's wonderful, and he's doing, and he has been doing remarkable work in the field, you know, giving validity to this. And he was actually the founding scientist with Fran and Bob for Forever Family Foundation. So yeah. I met him in 2005, and he actually, you know, read and wrote a blurb for the back cover of my book, The Light Between Us. So he's very much part of my journey, too. I love that you bring him up, and I don't think there are coincidences in that his name is coming up. I think I owe him a debt of gratitude for the light he shines into the world, you know, absolutely. And I think it's so wonderful that scientists and people in the scientific community are willing to be open to this and to explore this and help give validity to it, because like you said, it's something for all of us. I also love what you said about all of us being able to connect with the other side. You know, I tell everybody you don't need a medium. You can do it yourself. You just have to ask your loved ones on the other side for specific signs. You know, I'm all for tangible things, and I'm all for credible things. So I really think if each of us has our own experiences, then it becomes very real, too. It's one thing to go to a medium and have the experience and hear all that information, but to have that direct connection yourself is important as well. You know, I used to ask my loved ones on the other side for monarch butterflies, and I would get them, and I decided that was too easy, so I changed it to aardvarks, armadillos, and anteaters. And I will get them, you know. It's a very real thing, you know. I remember one time I was, you know, online on a buffet at an event, and I was, you know, standing there, I had some time, and I said to my grandfather on the other side, you know, I had this big decision I had to make for that Monday, and I had decided the path I was going to take, and I said, you know what, could you just send me an armadillo so that I know I'm on my best path and that, you know, you're with me? And at that moment, the two gentlemen in line behind me struck up a conversation out of the blue about armadillos. So you might get your signs in creative ways, but you will get them. And I always encourage people to do that. And you don't have to say it out loud. Just direct your thoughts to your loved ones on the other side and ask for something specific. And you'll usually get it within 3 days. And if they're really good, sometimes within 3 hours, you know, or three minutes, as was my case.
That's you, dear. I would hesitate to say you're guaranteed to get what you want. I mean, if you live in Massachusetts and you ask for an armadillo, it's very unlikely.
Well, that's what I mean. It might not cross your path, but somebody might start talking about it, or you'll see a picture of it, or it'll be in the news. You know, that's how it gets to you. It doesn't necessarily physically cross your path. You just have to be open to however they're going to send it to you. But that's a good point. Yeah.
But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't that you're not proving a negative. It doesn't mean your loved ones aren't listening or caring or don't love you. But my second book on this area was The Fun of Staying in Touch, which is all about signs. And one of the very important facts that we talk about there is that most people are getting them automatically from it's like part of the process. When people die nowadays, that they will give us signs.
Absolutely.
But nobody recognizes the signs, and they give up very quickly. If you're not acknowledging them, if you say, oh, it's just a coincidence, I keep finding all these pennies or all these feathers or whatever it is that they're giving you, they'll stop. So all that we really need to do, as Laura says, is to be open and look for any sign. I mean, I tell my loved ones, anything you can do is fine with me. And then just when I see something that might be a sign, I thank them. And I get a lot more now than I ever did before just because I'm doing my part. This is conversation is by definition two-way. And if we aren't doing our part, they have many more fun things to do where they are now than they had when they were here. And they might stop communicating. And so that's why it's important we do it. Now, one thing I want to talk to you about is your spirit guides. This is, for me, a brand new topic. I have paid no attention to my own guides, even though they have spoken to me and I've known that's who it was. My attitude was, you know, that they have their job and it's not to be in my daytime life until in February of this year, my primary guide broke in and basically told me I had to start channeling a book. So this was big news for me, and I'm just getting used to him and having him in my daytime life, and it's, frankly, a very enriching experience. How did you first meet your guide?
You know, I think I always just felt their presence there, but I didn't fully understand it. And then when I had my daughter, when it was, you know, right when I was about to honor all my gifts, you know, I just kind of had this flash image all of a sudden of one, and I just understood this message was that I was meant to, you know, really honor this on my path and do this in the world. And so to me, it was just a very natural thing. I think I'd always felt them there, but, you know, I don't think we're meant to get too hung up about who they are. I don't think we're supposed to. You know, some people get so focused on what their names are, what they look like. I'm like, if they want to show me, they'll show me, but I constantly go through my life feeling that connection. And for me, they always are on my upper right-hand side, so I can kind of feel them just above me, and I feel that connection. And sometimes I'll get what I call downloads from them. I call it like downloads from the universe, where I'll just have almost like a seven-hour conversation in a millisecond, and I'll understand what I'm meant to do. And I've learned to really honor that when it happens. I think for many of us, it's probably already occurring, but we're not being mindful of it. You know, the same that you were just discussing with signs, I think it's just really important to be more mindful of these occurrences and honor them when they happen, because that will always put you on your best path. And the more you open to that, the more magnificent and magical and beautiful your life becomes.
Oh, that's so true. For many of us who don't think that we're psychic, the conversations with our primary guides, and this is true of all of us, and actually with the team, because often we have guides who come and go, as Suzanne Wilson says, for a season or a reason, who are helping us with whatever we're involved in. But what I used to do was just, if I had a question or something that was bothering me, I would think it and sometimes say it aloud before I went to sleep. And I would usually wake up with an answer. It might not be what I wanted, but I would wake up with the understanding that I had been given an answer. Because all of us astral travel. All of us leave our bodies while our bodies sleep, and all of us meet, maybe not every night, but often with our primary guides and the team that they have assembled around us. And you may never meet your primary guide in the daytime. If I had been properly listening to my guidance at night, my primary guide wouldn't have felt the need to tell me in the daytime. It's not kosher for them to break into your waking life. He had a very big important reason to do it, so he did it. But you can really use the extra information and insights they'll give you, and they're eager to do that. It's simple. All you do is ask the question and then go to sleep, and they will give you an answer during the night if you're meant to have one, and you'll wake up with it in your mind in the morning. It's very easy. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes. You and they become very used to doing it.
Absolutely.
But that's if you're not Laura. Laura is psychic, so she's on a whole other plane. Do you know their names? Do you know anything about them? Your primary guide in particular?
I really don't. I just know that the one that, you know, had kind of come to me in a vision had very dark hair, and she was much younger than I was, but I had the sense that she was just so incredibly wise, you know, and I have a sense that, like you said, some come in, like I can feel I have three solid ones, and I think I have one female and two men, but then I have like a very powerful female behind it. And when I read for people, I can usually see, you know, how many guides they have, and I'll see sometimes this hierarchy of light beings behind them, too. So I feel that as well. It's almost like this higher realm. And I think the other side connects us, you know, some of us here, and there are certain, you know, it's almost like this team of light that we're working on projects together to help one another and help humanity, and they're helping as well. So, you know, it's this kind of beautiful sense that I have of that.
This is just, that was so wonderfully said. I think all of us who are working in this field and really devoting a lot of effort to it are having the same sense that there are very powerful forces that work behind this, and they're there for us. We're sort of the foot soldiers on the ground, but they're helping us every step of the way. And that help is available to anyone. All you have to do is sincerely dedicate yourself to doing what really we all should be doing anyway, which is to learn to love and forgive, to grow spiritually, and to find how we can be of help to others in this life. So, are you reading from for the public now? Do you do sittings for the public? Because I'm sure some people listening are going to be fascinated by the fact that you're double certified. For sure she's real, folks. So, are you open to that, to readings for the public?
Well, you know, I've always read all my life. I can never go with not reading. My dilemma is that there's one of me, and I have to be very, very careful of my energy. So I really can't ever do more than 5 readings a week. And, you know, I never advertise, but over the years, through word of mouth, I have a 4-year waiting list right now.
Do you
and so,
really?
Yeah. So you know what? And when the book came out, it skyrocketed from there. And so I'm trying my best to get to everybody. But one of the things that I do is I do public events sometimes, you know, and they're usually, you know, volunteer for Forever Family or so forth, where I'll do large groups. And I really trust that whoever is supposed to get the reading will. And so I'm trying to reach more people that way. But, you know, there are so many gifted psychic mediums out there. I always say, like, anybody recommended to you through word of mouth, really trust that, because if someone else had this extraordinary experience with someone, like how you were sharing, how you tried so many people, but there was this one particular one you went to who was really extraordinary, well, share that name with somebody. You know, I feel very honored to be part of Forever Family Foundation and the Winbridge Institute, and all those mediums on those lists have also been certified too. So I really think we all work collectively together as a team to reach as many people as we can. You know, but I certainly, on my website, I have my event list, and, you know, I'll post anything there. But I really hope whoever the other side chooses to get to me for a reading will get to me. You know, I trust
so
in that.
What is your website? Can we share that?
Sure. It's lauralynjackson.com. So it's www.lauralynjackson. And that's where I have, you know, links to other interesting sites and information on the organizations I've tested for, and my events page. And I also have, you know, press there of me reading, you know, on TV and so forth, you know, for different groups. So it's an interesting place to explore.
Well, that's wonderful. Okay, lauralynjackson.com is easy, and The Light Between Us is her book. And what's great about this is that it talks about what it's like to be psychic, or what it's like to be a medium from the inside. Not even so much, I mean, I saw it as sort of a universal journey that you were on. It wasn't narrowed to the extent that this is only applicable to Laura, but it made me begin to appreciate what it feels like to be a medium and what it feels like basically to be psychic and to be getting all of this information. It's a lovely book. It's been recommended by just about everybody. And as you point out, Gary Schwartz and, Evan Alexander and Brian Weiss, all these people who are my idols have recommended your book. I should say parenthetically that, of course, my own favorite psychic medium is Suzanne Wilson, and she also is developing a long list. So anyone who is interested in getting in with her should do that fairly quickly. She's the Carefree Medium. It's easy to find her on the web. I get emails frequently now from people that I've recommended call her or deal with her, and I just got one yesterday. This woman raved. It just transformed her life. I've never heard of a bad experience anyone's ever had with her. But again, as you say, Laura, there are many very good, very carefully developed psychic mediums who are doing really the Lord's work, and I'm so grateful to have met you. I think what you're doing is wonderful, and I wish you Godspeed with it.
Thank you so much.
We're coming to the end of our time. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you fully understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. Just search on either place for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books, as you know, are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and Flying High in Spirit. And my website is robertagrimes.com. Our guest next week will be Betsy Otter Thompson. Her book, Love Human, is a different take on how we can make the most of this lifetime. This is an area where I have a great deal of fresh interest, having channeled Liberating Jesus, and I'm very interested in the fact that even though people come from different directions toward how we should be learning and growing, all the lessons are in essence the same. I think there may be ways that Betsy's words and wisdom will touch you especially, and as perhaps no other has, so please join us. I think you'll enjoy meeting her. This week we've been talking with Laura Lynn Jackson. Her book, The Light Between Us, is a beautiful and moving story of how someone who has the gift of psychic abilities can use those gifts to enrich the lives of others, which is, of course, the point, isn't it? Dear friends, we all have gifts that can make us especially valuable to other people. All of us do. And trust me on this, using your gifts for others will make you so much happier than you ever could be in any other way. Perhaps, you know, like me, you have psychic gifts that are a little bit strange, and you're just not aware of them. I thought I was as psychic as a post. I didn't learn until I was almost 70 years old that although I am not conventionally psychic, I can channel books like nobody's business from dead people who are apparently have been preparing me all my life to do exactly that. I never knew. The ironic thing about all of this is that I've written a number of books that I thought I was just really, really smart, and it turns out every one of them was written by someone else. But what about you? What hidden abilities do you have that you can develop and use to help others as you enrich your own life as well? Let's all make 2016 the year, or if you're listening to this in the later years, whatever the coming year is, let's make that the year when we begin to find your special niche. For now, though, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.